If it's 6 p.m. on a Thursday, that means it's time for Lehigh Valley Discourse here on WDIY 88.1 FM, WDIY.org, and our WDIY app. And we start off with Perspectives with John Pierce. I'm your host, and our engineer this evening is James Zibrot. This evening we are talking about women who have had a prominence in history. We're calling them trailblazing women. And my guest is Jill Youngkin, who is assistant director and head curator at the Lehigh Valley Heritage Museum. Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's in Allentown at 4th Street and Walnut. Mm-hmm. Jill has been here before, so welcome back to our microphones, Jill.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Jill gave a talk over at the museum that was so interesting that I invited her to come and share with our listeners something about the women that she admires throughout history. So, mm-hmm. Jill, where do you start? There's so many.
There absolutely is. Too many for this segment, but what I hope is that it will encourage people, both men and women, to learn more about women's history, and that eventually one day we will not only talk about women's history, but incorporate it into everyone's history, the history of our country. Right now, I think there is a need to keep, talk about specifically women. But my hope is that one day we will know and understand how important women were and are in history and how they still play a very important role in today's world and history as well.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. There's a great quote from Mark Twain who said, "Where would we be without our mothers?" Scarce.
Absolutely true, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And we have Mother's Day coming up shortly. Mm-hmm. Let's get going with these women that you are calling trailblazers.
Yes. Okay. Well, I wanted first to bring up, I know we're at near the end of March, but to kind of sound out the importance of women's history, it was in 1987 when Congress actually declared March as National Women's History Month. And so each year, there is a presidential proclamation that is given by, of course, the incumbent president. And I just wanted to share a short quote with you that was presented by Jimmy Carter when he was president and on the importance of National Women's History Month. This is what he said. "From the first settlers who came to our shores, from the first American Indian families who befriended them, men and women have worked together to build this nation. Too often the women were unsung, and sometimes their contributions went unnoticed. But the achievements, leadership, courage, strength, and love of the women who built America was as vital as that of the men whose names we know so well." And I think that just sums up why we're here today and why
we're talking about some
of these women.
Yeah. That's from Jimmy Carter, president.
That was from Jimmy Carter when he was president, and that was actually when Women's History Day was only a week. In 1987, it was expanded to a whole month, but he understood the importance of women and men and women working together and sharing their history.
Right.
So I thought I would talk about some of these trailblazing women today, about their achievements, how they have challenged our perceptions of women, and how some of those perceptions just have been forgotten. So these are women who stepped out of their norms, and in doing so have made the United States, and indeed the world, a better place. Now, you may ask, how did I pick these women? And so I did want to tell people a little bit about that, because the list is exhaustive. I had to only pick a few people to talk about. I picked women, actually, that I'm thinking most people may not know much about, if anything, about. Women that we need to learn about. They come from different backgrounds. I am focusing on the 19th century, the 1800s, because that is a particular area that I know the best and an area that I studied in graduate school. However, I would like to start with one woman who actually lived in the 1700s. And I want to do that because I think everyone will know her, but I don't think they know everything about her and what her contributions were. And her name is Hannah Callahill Penn. I think we all recognize the Penn name. William Penn was the founder of our colony. And Hannah was his wife, his second wife. And she was actually Pennsylvania's first female leader. She was the acting governor of Pennsylvania.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yes. You know, William Penn, first of all, was very much her senior. He had a stroke, and he was debilitated. He was unable to lead the government. So she stepped in, and she did that for 6 years after his stroke, and then 8 years after that, after he passed away, after he had died. So for those 14 years, she was a proprietor of a grant from the Crown that we now call Pennsylvania.
Right.
So, and think about, you know, what that involved. This is a woman who really was generally always in the background, and all of a sudden she's at the forefront of a colony. Pretty amazing. So when she moved, she and William Penn, as we know, moved to Pensbury Manor, and that's where she was. At that time, she took over responsibility of the management of the estate. So that was first. What she did during the time after she took over for those 14 years, she paid off all of William Penn's debts, and apparently he did overspend quite a bit. When he did die, she was named the sole executress, and her husband left to her and her children, of course, Pennsylvania, what we call Pennsylvania. And she administered and governed the state with full legal and financial authority at that time. She kept the colony running in very good shape. She handled all negotiations, or most of the negotiations, especially over the longstanding Pennsylvania-Maryland border controversy. And that was resolved during her time. Basically, Maryland said, oh, part of Pennsylvania is ours. And Pennsylvania said, no, it's not. So if it wasn't for her, Pennsylvania would have been much smaller than it is today.
Oh, that's interesting.
So she was, again, a very good governor. We can call her actually the first governor of Pennsylvania, and she would also be the only woman governor of Pennsylvania, actually. She died on December 20th in 1726, and the proprietorship was then passed on to her sons, and we probably all know their names too, John, Thomas, and Richard Penn. I think, again, usually people remember her as her role as a wife and a mother, but she really was so much more. Also, by the way, she was granted the status of honorary citizen of the United States, the first woman to ever be granted that. And again, she was the first woman in the United States to have formal political authority. So she's quite something.
Yes, indeed.
I can tell you about some other women, too. Another woman that I really admire very much, and somewhat we're staying somewhat in the political vein, is Jeanette Rankin. She was the first woman elected to the United States Congress, and she was quite a trailblazer when you think about all the women who were able to follow in her footsteps because of her achievements. She was born in 1881 in the territory that we now call Montana. She graduated from college and briefly worked as a teacher and social worker. Then she went to graduate school, University of Washington, and became involved in the women's suffrage movement. And she helped to win suffrage in that state of Washington. And then, in 1914, she helped to win suffrage in her own home state of Montana. 2 years later, she was elected to the United States Congress. So she is known, first of all, and probably foremost, as the first woman elected to the United States Congress. And you have to remember this. This is what I always find very amazing, too. This was 4 years before the 19th Amendment, which guaranteed women the right to vote.
Yes, all over the country.
Mm-hmm, yes, all over the whole full country.
Right.
So she was elected as a United States Congressperson representative even before suffrage for all women.
And so, Jill, you say that she was active with suffrage in Montana.
Well, first in when she went to school in Washington State. University. Yeah, she was there at the University of Washington. And then she was helped to win suffrage in her own home state of Montana.
And
in
that was before 1920, which
yes.
is the date mm-hmm. that we think of as the first time that women could vote.
Right.
But in certain parts of the country, they could already vote.
Yes. Mm-hmm. In some states, not too many, women did have full suffrage. They may have had partial suffrage, like, for example, they could have voted on a local level
yes.
or even a state level, but did not have full suffrage. But there were, yeah, generally most of those states were out in the western part of the United States as well. So she also served two non-consecutive terms in the House of Representatives. So both those terms coincided first with World War I and then World War II.
Oh.
So she was in office during World War I, was not reelected, and then was elected back during World War II. She was the only member of Congress to vote against U.S. involvement in both of the world wars. Again, voted against it in World War I and voted against it, the entry into World War II as well.
So this is Jeanette Rankin.
This is Jeanette Rankin, and this is what she said. She just said, "I want to stand by my country, but I cannot vote for war." And as she was called, you know, a lot of people said, well, this is why women should not be able to be in Congress. This is, women don't have the ability. Look at this woman. She voted against the war.
Yeah. She can't think straight.
Right. Mm-hmm. She can't. Yeah, right. Exactly. Oh, well. Yeah. It's, you know, and I admire her that she actually stood up for her country
for
what she thought was right.
Right.
She, by the way, was a committed pacifist. And so, you know, that's, she just did not care what if that would ruin her political career or not. And as I mentioned, so many people said, you know, women just cannot do this. They can't take the burdens of membership, et cetera. So, but she was it. So she also, again, was a tireless activist after she left office. And she worked to expand voting rights, introduce legislation for the 19th Amendment. She worked to ensure better working conditions for workers across the United States and to improve health care for women and infants. She just championed a multitude of diverse issues, things that she cared about, things that she knew people in the United States would care about and need help with. So she also, just to finish with her, but she led a campaign when she was 87 years old to protest the Vietnam War.
87 years old?
Yes, she was 87 Whoa. Years old, and she led a campaign against the Vietnam War to protest our participation
yes,
in it.
Yes, and there were plenty of people who did that, too.
Yes, she did.
But she was an outstanding woman who participated.
Yeah, and especially at 87. I think most of us are looking at, you know, being in a rocking chair at that age.
We're hoping to make it that far.
Or make it that far. You're yeah. absolutely right.
Jill, yeah. it's time for us to take a break here
okay.
on Perspectives by John Pierce. My guest is Jill Youngkin, Assistant Director and Head Curator of the Lehigh Valley Heritage Museum. And we're highlighting trailblazing women in this month of March. Hang in there with us, dear listeners, and we'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY News engages the Lehigh Valley with accurate, unbiased reporting from many sources and volunteer real voices. Listen to WDIY News during Morning Edition, Fresh Air, All Things Considered, and Weekend Edition, every day here on 88.1 FM, streaming on WDIY.org and the WDIY phone app. WDIY. Many choices, real voices.
And we're back chatting with Jill Youngkin about trailblazing women in our history. Jill started off in the 18th century. She moved up to the 19th century because this is such a short program. She has to eliminate most of the folks that she might love to talk about. So, Jill, who's next?
Okay, well, another person that I do really like to talk about is Maria Mitchell. She was one person that I just came upon by happenstance and just learned about her life, and I thought, oh my goodness, this woman is just remarkable. And I'll tell you why. It was because she was the first female astronomer in the United States, and also the first American scientist to discover a comet. And I started getting kind of into astronomy now, so I thought, oh my goodness, this is a sign. I have to include her. So, as I mentioned, the first female astronomer in the United States when women just didn't really go to school. She was born in 1818. She was also an early advocate for science and math education for girls, and she was also the first female astronomy professor. So she put her money where her mouth was.
Yeah, she was way ahead of her time.
She absolutely was. She was born in Nantucket, Massachusetts, at a time when women just did not enter the field of science, let alone usually go to higher degrees in school. As a child, she had a voracious curiosity and exceptional powers of observation, which are very necessary, as you know, for astronomy. She got started in it because she assisted her father, who was an amateur astronomer, and she did calculations and celestial observations in their home. They had their own telescope that she looked at every night. She was always very excited to get home and wait for the darkness so she could look at the stars. She completed her education at 16 and then opened a training school for girls in math and science. So on the night of October 1st in 1847, she was looking at the night sky and she noticed a small blurry streak. It was invisible to the naked eye. She had to see it through her telescope. And she realized that it was a comet. Now, she was so excited, she ran and she told her father, and he wanted to announce it right away that, oh, my daughter just discovered a comet. But she was more cautious, and she recorded the object's position, and she continued to observe it to make sure it was a comet, and indeed, it was. The new discovery was named after her. It was called Miss Mitchell's Comet. And she was awarded a gold medal by King Frederick VI of Denmark. You may wonder, what's the connection there?
Right.
But he seemed to like astronomy, too. And he developed a program where he awarded someone with a gold medal in astronomy every year. And this was the year she was the first woman, of course, to get this. Other honors followed, recognition by the American Association for the Advancement of Science and the Smithsonian Institution. And the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. So, in 1865, Mitchell became another trailblazing person of a faculty member at Vassar College, making her, again, the first female astronomy professor in the United States. She was also appointed director of Vassar College's observatory. You have to remember, this is a really big deal in a male dominated world, especially
Absolutely.
In science.
Yes.
She taught women, of course, to observe the night sky just as she had. She took somewhat of an unorthodox approach into education. She refused to grade students or record absences. She said to them, question everything. She defied social conventions by having her female students come out at night for classwork and celestial observations. And she also brought noted feminists into the observatory to speak on political issues. Among them, Julia Ward Howe was one of those. She continued her research and also published her research and as well as some of her students' research. At Vassar, she basically became a legend. This woman was,
Maria Mitchell.
Yes, Maria Mitchell. Yeah. She also pioneered other things as well, like photography, sunspots, and studied the surfaces of planets, and just amazing. And then, just to mention, because I think this is so important, she was very active in opposing slavery and in advocating for women's rights. And I noticed that with so many of these women, these trailblazing women, that they had these goals in mind, but they also realized or felt the need to help women or those who were of less social standing, or she realized the absolute cruelty of slavery and worked towards eradicating that, basically abolishing it. She felt that women's minds were too often wasted when they were forced to spend their time sewing rather than pursuing intellectual activities. And so she, again, put her money where her mouth was.
Yes.
And made a very big difference in the world.
Wow.
She died in 1889 and, again, is a relatively unknown person, even though she was the first American women astronomer.
Right. I did not know the name Maria Mitchell.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I learned something. Thank you.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
That's why we do perspectives here on WDIY.
Absolutely. I just want to mention, too, just one thing, because in some ways it's so important to learn about these women and to remember their accomplishments, because even in today's world, when, of course, more women go to college and get advanced degrees, they're still in some ways pigeonholed into their boxes. And thinking about astronomy, for example, only about 27, it's probably a little over 27, 27.3 or so, astronomers are women in 2024. Yes,
27%.
Yeah, 27%.
So about a quarter of astronomy degrees.
Yes. Who actually are, astronomers.
That sounds about right. So,
all right.
Who's next?
I want to turn to the skies and to what I call a daredevil of the sky. Her name is Bessie Coleman. We all know, or most of us know, about Amelia Earhart and her wonderful accomplishments. But I don't think most of us know about Bessie Coleman. She was born in 1892. And she was the first African-American woman to earn a pilot's license.
Oh.
She was born in Atlanta, Texas, and she was one of 13 children. And her mother was African-American, and her father was Native American. She grew up helping her mother pick cotton, and she washed laundry to earn extra money. By the time she was 18, she had earned enough money to attend school, which was the Colored Agricultural and Normal School. It's now Langston University, and that's in Oklahoma. She had to drop out, though, after only one semester because she could no longer afford the tuition. I also want you to keep in mind, just kind of to review our history, that this is the era of Jim Crow. This is, you know, when racial segregation, African Americans were barred from voting with literacy tests, poll tax, you know, that kind of thing. They couldn't ride in railroad cars, and they couldn't use a lot of public facilities that were set aside for whites. So this is the climate that Bessie Coleman is growing up in and becoming a young woman. What she decided to do is moved to Chicago. Her brother lived there, and so she went, and she was hoping she could have a better life. And her brother kept teasing her because he knew about how she loved the sky and how she wanted to fly. And he said, "Oh, well, you can't fly in the United States, but you can fly in France if you're a woman." So guess what she did?
Went to France.
She did, but before she did that, she learned to speak French.
Oh.
So... learned to speak French, and she went to France, and she applied to schools there, and she was accepted. It was and you have to excuse my French, because I don't know French, but it was the Caudron Brothers School of Aviation in Le Contoy, France. I'm not sure how you say that.
Okay.
And it is there that she received her international pilot's license on June 15th, 1924. And then she returned to the United States. And again, there were not that many avenues open to her, so she became a barnstorming pilot, and she performed stunts at aviation shows. That was her only avenue that she had as a woman and African American. But she also would only perform in exhibitions there if the crowds were desegregated. So I think that really took a lot of moxie to do that.
Yeah, good word.
Yeah. She was performing on April 30th in 1926, and she and her mechanic went up for a practice run before the performance. And unfortunately, the flight turned tragic. The plane accelerated, and it then suddenly flipped. It took a nosedive, tail spinned, and flipped over. And both she and her mechanic were killed.
Oh.
So what was such a promising life and career for this very young woman work out the way it was.
She was about 34, 35 at the time.
Yeah, she's very young. But her mother said that she was a brave and determined woman who sought to fulfill her hopes and dreams and to amount to something, and she did.
She died doing something that she loved
to
do.
Yes, yeah, she certainly did.
Oh. And we have time for one more trailblazer.
Oh, gosh.
How to choose.
That's right, yeah. How about if we do a little bit about science?
Hi. Sure.
I'm going to tell you a little bit about Alice Ball. She was born again in 1892, so we're near the end of the 19th century now. She was an African-American woman, and she was a chemist. She was one of the first African-American women to receive a master's degree in chemistry. She became the first female chemistry professor at the College of Hawaii. Her great contribution was to develop a successful treatment for Hansen's disease, which is actually known as, to most of us, as leprosy.
Oh.
And during that time period in the 1900s, those with leprosy, we certainly did not understand the disease like we do now. So they faced social discrimination. Some people faced banishment. So her work enabled thousands of outcast individuals to return home. Unfortunately, she died quite young. She was only 24 when she passed away. She actually had inhaled a chlorine gas in the laboratory and died. But she also, there was one of the men who worked in the laboratory with her who took credit for her work. So it wasn't until much later that people found out, they realized that she was actually the one that discovered this method, and it became known as the Ball method.
Alice Ball.
Alice Ball, yes. And, of course, she never actually got to realize the full impact of her own discovery. And as I mentioned, that this gentleman took credit for her discovery and for her research. And he actually called it the Dean method until they finally realized and then renamed it the Ball method after her.
She died at the age of 24.
Yes.
And she is remembered today as one of our trailblazing women.
Absolutely.
Just think, in our own lives, suppose I had died at age 24.
Yes.
Nobody would be talking about me today except possibly the family.
Right.
But
yeah, I would say the same thing, too, about me. 24, you're still a child, really. Most people haven't made their way
and
yet.
She made a mark.
Yes, she changed people's lives, and so she not only overcame racial and gender barriers, but she made this discovery that changed the lives of so many people.
Wow.
Very important, yeah.
Well, maybe we do have time for yet another.
Okay, I'm just going to tell you a little bit about Harriet Baker. She was a preacher and evangelicist. She is often referred to as the founder of the first colored church in Lehigh County. So I'm bringing us around to this area here.
Good.
She was an amazing preacher, and she was able to unite both black and white people with her preaching.
And what was her era?
She was born in 1829. She died in 1913. She had a religious conversion when she was only about 12 or 13. She took her path towards religion at that early age. When you look back at that time in the 1800s, women were not allowed to be preachers. She did it anyway. And the church that she belonged to, the AME Zion Church, her minister derided her in the pulpit in front of the congregation and said, "You cannot do this. You should not do it." Her friends told her, you can't do this. You should not become a preacher. She had been married at that time. Her husband told her, no, you should not do this. You are supposed to be at home. You have children. And she said, I have to. I have been called to preach by God.
She had a talent for it.
And she did it. Amazing woman. Absolutely amazing woman.
Well, Jill Youngkin, my guest this evening on Perspectives, has brought us profiles of several trailblazing women. And, of course, we could go on and on, Jill. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, our time is up for this Thursday. We do appreciate your coming back to our WDIY microphones. Thanks to James Zibret for his work as our engineer. I'm John Pierce, your host. Thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in. Until we meet again, remember to be gentle with your neighbor.
If you enjoyed this program, please go to the WDIY website or app to share or become a WDIY member.